in the discussion, but I did meet with the Council of Faculty Associations to discuss the Faculty Association bylaw that we'll be discussing, so I'd be happy to answer any questions about that. Also, a super fun thing I found out today is that the Green and Gold Day is going to be on the last day of Gov Week, which I think is going to be very exciting. So, yeah, please ask me any questions, and also these four VPs and I, three plus me, will be going, will be out of town tomorrow, Thursday, Friday, and Monday, returning on Tuesday with very limited email or internet access. So if you have to ask us something urgently, ask us today or ask President Ramon. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Vice President Bannister. We'll go next to Vice President Patches.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Other than what I included in my reports, not a ton to communicate, but I'd just like to provide a bit of clarification on my response to Councillor Hammond. In my response, I stated that Rattle County, you know, had a slight loss of $100, and then I went through the profit loss statement a little more closely with our accounting department, and I was informed that the charges for the equipment that was used was actually spread across multiple events, so we didn't come out at a loss around the patio. Around the patio, we actually profited about $300 to $400, which was a margin of about 20%. So, great news around the patio, it's a success. So, thank you.
Thank you very much, Vice President Patches. Any other executives wish to make a report? I'm going to guess that's Vice President Sundari.
Sure. All right, everybody. So there's one thing that's not on my report. This was fairly new. I guess it happened yesterday, I believe. So with CASA, the Federal Lobby Group, that's the Canadian Alliance of Student Associations, I'm on the National Advocacy Team. And we've been looking into a campaign that we're planning on doing during the year. And everybody on NACS, we've decided that sometime during the fall semester, we'd like to do a sexual assault campaign. So just, you know, keep your eyes peeled for that. Something that Cass is doing, and yeah, I'll give you guys a little bit more information in my next report. All right.
Thank you very much, Vice President Sundari. Vice President Ogosane, go ahead.
So that was a nice segue into what I was going to talk about. This is already in my report, but I think it's pretty important. So I just want to tell you that we had our first meeting for the steering committee of the sexual assault review implementation of the recommendations that were made. So there's a few subcommittees that will be like working groups that will take on specific tasks, and we're still determining the membership and the mandate of each one of them, and so keep your eyes open as well. I am going to ask that students be, especially from Students Council, be included on some of the subcommittees, along with some executive members. So let me know if you're interested in advance, and if not, I'll probably be asking over email or on the WhatsApp group. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Unless someone has a report for President Rahman, we'll move on to board and committee reports, starting with CAC.
We met last Tuesday, yes. Essentially what came out of that meeting was we finalized what we wanted to see the council a mentorship program, which pretty much defined their guidelines, and it will officially be renamed Council Connections. Very exciting. And then just overall CAC news, we finalized our July hangout thing. Taste of Edmonton happened to fall on a council week, so assuming the next council meeting doesn't go too long, we can head over to Churchill Square and eat some food. And then also for our next council meeting, I met with one woman in the SU, Elizabeth, to get a catalog for council apparel. So we'll be talking about council apparel, which I know is a very hot button issue with y'all. So it'll be Tuesday at 7 p.m. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Angus. We'll go next to Finance Committee for an update. Vice President Pence has an update for us.
Sure thing. So last Finance Committee, we discussed item number 7C on today's order papers, which has to do with accessing funds from the Woods Preserve, in which I'll provide more details once we move to that item. And then we also talked about, so we appointed two counselors to the student group services adjudicator, or no, the awards. Yeah, the awards adjudication committee. We haven't quite appointed them yet, but we did have some clarifications and discuss the process in which we will be returning to and appointing counselors to in the near future. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Vice President Patches. We'll go next to if anyone has an update on behalf of the policy committee.
I do. This is from Victoria, or Councillor Dion. Consultation on our upcoming sexual violence policy is going swimmingly. We've reached out to a bunch of stakeholders across the campus, including the Sexual Assault Center, the Trinity Sun Sororities, and the faculty associations at Campus St. John and Augustana. You can expect to see the first principles at our next council meeting. Aside from that, the committee is taking a look at some policies that were renewed last year that were not properly reviewed. The next meeting is on July 20th at 6 p.m. if anyone is interested in attending.
Thank you very much. We'll go next to Vice President Bannister for an update on the nominating committee.
We have not met, so I have nothing to report.
Thank you very much. We'll go next to Councillor Hammond, who would be so kind as to provide us an update from audit committee.
Not too much to report either. We met to set who would be auditing which faculty association, and we went through the May receipts. Looked pretty good. So we will continue investigating the money.
Thank you very much, Councillor Hammond. Just keep following the money, I guess. We'll go next to Councillor Christensen for an update on bylaw committee.
Thank you. Generally, we've been working on some of the bylaw changes, both of which are here today. One was the Bill number 2, which was sent back to council at our last meeting of Students Council, or sent back to Bylaw Committee from our last meeting of Students Council. The second is led by Councillor Larson for some elections changes, which are the first in the series that will be coming through. Also, in the coming weeks, we'll be talking about department associations, and that will be led by Vice President Bannister. If there's any changes that anyone is hoping to accomplish this year, I would definitely recommend bringing them to bylaw or letting me know sometime this summer. I know ideally it's best to get the bulk work for bylaw committee done during the summer, which is why I've been moving a lot of legislation through right now. As throughout the year, things become difficult when your meetings sometimes go for 3 hours. So, if there's any questions or any comments, please do let me know. And I'm definitely here to help if there's bylaw changes that you'd like to see done this year as part of your campaign promises, or if there's something you think needs to be changed, I'm more than happy to entertain those. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Councillor Christensen. Any other reports from any other members of any boards or committees? We'll go to Councillor Brophy.
Thank you. Last week I attended a meeting of the Student Legal Services of Edmonton Board of Directors. There wasn't really anything particularly pertinent to council, but if anybody is curious about what exactly SLS does and what exactly the board did talk about, feel free to chat with me anytime or fire off an email. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Councillor Brophy. Any other members of any boards or committees who wish to make a report? Yes, Governor Champagne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. No written report since we have literally done nothing in the board since the last meeting. We haven't had any meetings, which is not abnormal for this period of the year. However, I am preparing a proposal for a session for GovWeek. So if you have any questions about the board or things you think I should cover during that session, I invite you to send me that by email or talk to me after the meeting or during the break. If you want to help maybe facilitate it, I'm open to that too. So talk to me. And I encourage everyone to think of ways that we could think of sessions that we could offer during this week to help students better understand our roles as counselors and the role of the student union in their lives. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Governor Champagne. Any other members of the boards or committees who wish to make a report? Seeing none, we'll close for the committee reports there and move into open forum. Are there any questions for open forum? Seeing none, we'll close the open forum there, and we'll move into question period. Before I start our first 15 minutes, like our 15 minutes of oral time, just want to draw your attention to two written questions that were submitted, one from Councillor Hammond, one from Councillor Christensen, both to Vice President Patches. I'll read each of the questions so that people have an idea of what the content of the question and the answer would be. The question from Councillor Hammond was, how is Groton and the Patty performing financially in terms of attendance and any other metrics of success? Vice President Patches provided a response as well as provided some information in his oral report as to the financial performance of Groton and the Patio. Councillor Hammond, do you have a follow-up question for Vice President Patches about radio?
No, thank you.
Wonderful. The next question came from Councillor Christensen to Vice President Patches. Information has been circulating that the SU website might be updated / redesigned in the near future. I was wondering if the Vice President could comment on if this is true and if there are any timelines, if there is a timeline, any timeline for updates to the website to take place to further ensure serve students' needs. Vice President Patches provided a response. Councillor Christensen, would you like to follow up that question with a follow-up question, Bill? Wonderful. All right. So, are there any oral questions for question period? We'll go with Councillor Farouk.
This is for Vice President Bannister. Sorry, that's two. Since the opening of the applications for Gulf Week, have we received any applications from students at large or faculty associations or other bodies?
Thank you for the question. Also, side note I forgot is as of tonight, the applications are available in French for our Francophone friends. So in terms of applicants, we have advertised pretty significantly. I have lots of commitments from people that they will be applying to facilitate session or register their event. As of this moment, we have only received two actual applications. I'm not terribly concerned about that. We've given a month for the applications to be open, and I'm assuming most people will apply in the last few days. Unfortunately, that's kind of just the nature. So I'll just be hyperventilating in my office until about August 4th, when I'm assuming 80% of the applications will come in. So if you're interested in running a session and would like to save my heart, you're always welcome to apply earlier than August 5th. But as of right now, we do have two applicants.
Thank you very much, Vice President Bannister. Are there any further questions for question period? We'll go with, is that Councillor Larson? Go ahead.
This is for our operations and finance, Mr. Patches. I'm just curious as to what the process is to updating our website and ensuring that something does kind of happen in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you for the question, Councillor Larson. So specifically, our website is done internally through our marketing department. We have a pretty extensive marketing department as well as one employee that's specifically trained in coding for online and all that. The updating of the website is now smack dab in the middle of the radar for the marketing team. They just finished up the handbook, and the handbook is a fairly large chunk of time that I know they were stressing out quite a bit about. So now the updating will happen regularly, and it will happen right away to make sure that to make sure it's stayed up to date. But it's an internal process, and now the handbook's ready to be rolled out. It's on their radar.
Thank you very much, Vice President Patches. Councillor Farouk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This question is again for Vice President Bannister. Would you be able to elaborate on your discussion about the Faculty Association bill with COPA and what their response was?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, and thank you, Councillor Farouk. That's nice. It saves me a speaking turn in the debate if I do it now. So at COPA, we had 9 people present out of a possible 13, which I was satisfied with for a summer meeting. Out of those 9, 7 of them were very comfortable with what was proposed. They were happy with the steps and they were happy with it on principle. One of them was opposed to the concept on principle, and then one of them thought the steps were too rigorous. So overarchingly, I'd say that COFO was generally in support of this. For the most part, no one had like super strong feelings one way or the other, and they appreciated being consulted. I did invite them all to this meeting as well. I don't know if any of them came, but they were all aware that they were welcome to attend both this and the bylaw meeting.
Thank you very much, Vice President Bannister. Are there any further questions for question period? Councillor Angus?
My question is for the Vice President Academic. Is it possible to inform us which faculty you voted against the proposal? Or like the one you said I voted against the hotel proposal?
There was one faculty association that was against it on principle, which was Campus National.
Thank you very much. Governor Champagne.
I pass. Councillor Angus asked my question.
Any further questions for question period? Governor Champagne.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Actually, I'd like maybe to expand on that. Can the Vice President expand on the arguments that were used to oppose the concept? I'm curious.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Governor Champagne. So the president of AWSJ was present, and that individual stated that they felt it was more important that the University of Alberta, all the student governance bodies, act collectively and with each other's best interests in mind. And they were concerned that this bylaw would compromise that, basically stating a position that one faculty association shouldn't need to go against SU political policy because the SU political policy does have what's best in mind for all students at heart. So that, I don't want to put words in their mouth, but that is what I gathered from their statement. There are very detailed minutes on from that COPA meeting that I'd be happy to share with all members of council if you'd like to read that verbatim from the minute taker's word.
Thank you very much. Are there any further questions for question period? Seeing none, we'll close question period there. And we'll move into board and committee business, starting with item 7A, bill number 2, Faculty Association Political Policy Diversion, first principles. Councillor Christensen, seconded by Councillor Krofnow, move to approve bill number 2 on the recommendation of bylaw committee and amend bylaw 8100 to allow faculty associations to deviate from political policy according to these principles. The first principles are listed on the board papers, and I'll scroll down to at least some of them. Councillor Christensen, would you like to introduce? Go ahead.
Thank you. So in light of the motion passed at the last meeting of Students Council, bylaw committee took back the last proposal that was made and, in my opinion, slashed and burned the old thing and rebuilt it from the ground up. There was many concerns last time with the house, unspecific it was before. I believe now that it is beyond specific. We've also added many more checkpoints that weren't in place beforehand. And I hope that they are specific enough for everyone here today. The attendance at the committee was really good from the exec perspective. We had 4 out of the 5 execs in attendance, which was really nice. All of whom created and helped with the wording of this, with this piece of legislation. There was a few general counselors, but we were glad that everyone put some good thought into this, and those that provided us feedback, so that we could make something that hopefully we can kind of come to some type of agreement on. I know that many of us, the bylaw committee, who've kind of been pushing for this, have made many concessions on this front from when I first started working on this last year. And it's just out of realization that at some point it's important to have some type of process in place. It might not be perfect, but we have worked tirelessly to come up with some type of process that will work for everyone. And I really ask you to look at this today and see if you can support this in its current form. We had a great discussion of bylaw, and we came up with a decent consensus. I think everyone at the table was generally in favor of the process that was laid out. we've kind of been through a lot of the argument points, but again, our kind of main point of this is to address a process that will be in place should it ever be needed. Today, there is no need for it, most likely, but you never know what future policies 8 years from now will look like. We never know what the political climate will look like in the future. And I think just having, instead of limiting people, having a way to generate conversation, and this process involves extensive consultation with this body, with the faculty association's members, with this body again, if there's plebiscites, there's discussions, and if there is an amicable way to resolve any disputes with the policy deviation, there is now a forced conversation that will hopefully allow for that. And if not, there are processes to move forward. So I know we all at Bylaw would love to entertain any questions that you might have, and thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much, Councillor Christensen. Is there any debate on item 7A? Councillor Farouk.
I just like to express my support for this bylaw. Read over it. Was going to attend the actual meeting because of prior engagement, but I did send a decently detailed email with my thoughts and ideas. Glad to see some of them were in here at some point or other. But yeah, this looks great. It's very well hashed out, and I think resolves the gray areas and the concerns that were raised at the last meeting. And yeah, I hope that this passes. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Farouk. We'll go next to Mr. Bonnerchuk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. So I am speaking today against this motion. I would like to remind everyone again, this is the position of Councillor Mondo, who's appointed me as his proxy. I promise I am on a leash. But I do agree with him in this case. I see the concessions that have been made, and it's not the method that me and my counselor are opposed to. It's more of the nature of the bill, and that we're opposed to this bill in any form, mostly because of the divisive nature of it. The way I've seen it, I'll try not to sound like a broken record from 2 weeks ago, but when I look at it, to be frank, smaller faculties are the ones who are most likely to use it. They do have, the issue I see with that though is that they tend to have equal representation proportionally on council. And I know it doesn't look like it a lot of the time when you see 7 science counselors, 6 arts counselors, but by law 100, it splits out the seats as proportionally as it can under an approved formula that council has passed in the past. And I understand the difficulty of being the singular voice for sometimes 1,000+ constituents. Council happens to be set up in this fashion though. When we talk about constituents, FAs and councillors tend to be elected from the same people. Of course, there are those who vote in one election and not another, but we're not talking about 2 inherently different constituencies with this. So more about the nature of the bill, I just find that it is not in the best interest of council or those who represent students on council. If need be, there can always be, if we're looking at representation and the lack of it, we can always look at like creation of a second body, like the United States Senate, where you have the same number of representatives from each faculty, regardless of the size of it, to smooth it out like that. If that's an option, I know that's very difficult also, but that is another option. The job of every councillor is to relay concerns about policies and bylaw and what the SU is doing with council, and not to be able to have a mechanism to dance around an existing policy. If a policy isn't working for a specific faculty, council should look at the viability of the policy as a whole. And although I know that policies don't work for every student all the time, what we're looking at is to find a majority of people, of the representatives here, supporting this. Instead of looking at how a faculty can be an exception to a policy, look at why does this policy not fit, and is it the right policy to have if it very harmfully impacts one faculty, even if it's a smaller faculty. We're an idea where policies should work to benefit the majority of the students, which is why we have a majority vote as the threshold in council for most of our motions. It is hard, it's very hard to get 100% consensus, but a split vote on a policy, in my opinion, is better than a faculty being able to step around it entirely. And I know it's only supposed to be used for emergency situations or very pressing matters, but I see this, any use of it, as being too much of a division in council. And I don't mean to make light of the steps that the committee outlined to make it in its amended form. I think that that was a lot of work, but again, it's not the process that I'm opposed to. It is largely the idea of it entirely. I can think of quite a few federal laws that Alberta would like to be exempt from, but it's not how it works all the time. I think we're stronger as one unit. So to sum up, if I had to choose, I would regrettably say I'd prefer a system where not everyone is happy on every motion, but where we can all still be part of the students' union family together, if you will, because I do believe we're stronger together as one unit, even if the policies don't always benefit everyone on the surface. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll go to, I believe this is Councillor Brophy.
Thank you. Yes. I don't see this as a matter of having fair representation, but a matter of making sure that fair representation is actually effective representation. Because I do think that there are incredibly rare instances where something is, where it's just a matter of something being good for the many and bad for the few, but something being, or something we could negotiate and find some sort of compromise. There could be, and has been, a very rare case where something is clearly the only option for the many, but the opposite is the only option for the few. And I think it's important that that voice be able to be heard at any level that they wish to make it heard. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Brophy. We'll go next to Councillor Mahal.
I'd like to say that I support this. Like last time when I was first brought up, I was kind of on the fence, but I appreciate like the increase in all those check stops and like the process has been reworked, and I think it adds more, it gives them more onus, I guess. It puts the onus on like the faculty to make sure that they're doing it correctly and for the right reasons, I guess. I'd say rather than hoping that it never has to be used, we should have something in case, like something, a mechanism in place in case it needs to be used in the odd occurrence, rather than just hoping it never happens and then not have a mechanism in the instance where maybe it does. So I think it's better to have this in place now rather than coming, like going down the road and finding out, oh, we need this, but we don't have it. So, you know, that's what I wanted to say.
Thank you very much. Is there any further debates on item 7A? Go to Councillor Angus.
Just to echo what Mr. Bonchak had said for Councillor Monda, I appreciate the effort that was put into this. I know it's been a hard fought battle for quite a lot. I've heard a lot about it, and just looking at the faces right now, I can tell that it's a lot going on. But similar, it's something that I'm worried against just in practice in general. I appreciate that we should have something just in case it happens, and I do appreciate that fact, but at the end of the day, this is still something that I feel very strongly in, and I appreciate all the work, and but despite that, I will be voting against this motion.
Thank you very much, Councillor Angus. We'll go next to Vice President Bannister.
Thank you, everyone. This is a great discussion, as last time was as well. I am in favor of this bylaw, and the reason I am is because at COPA, that is the direction that they seem to want to go in. And beyond that, I think this is fair. I think it's reasonable to outline a process. Something that I think compared to kind of in my mind is not every bylaw and policy that we have because we're endorsing that behavior. We have because we need to use it. There's lots of bylaws and policies we have that we have just in case. And I think that this is similar to one. Just if we don't have a bylaw, it doesn't mean that it's necessarily not going to happen. Obviously, it wouldn't in the sense that like it's not allowed, but I think it's better to have a process that's fair and rigorous. I'm in favor of this. I think that, and I appreciate all the work that bylaw has put into this and all the discussion that's happening as well.
Thank you very much, Vice President Bannister. We'll go next to Councillor Christensen.
Thank you all so much for the good conversation. And I understand there is some, like, or it comes down to just the principle of the motion that is challenging, and I respect those people for representing their constituents. I really think, above all else, with how rigorous this is now, it would be quite the fight to ever get this to actually work. I'm not going to lie, it's very rigorous, more so than I initially would have liked, but I'm a realist in this. But I think what it will do, if this ever does need to be used, is it will really generate a good conversation that will at this council with the executive, with the people who draft the policies and stuff, and to really, I think, lead to more engagement with those faculty associations to see why these policies are in place and how perhaps they might, if it's more amicable discussion, why the value of it there, and see if there's any way that it, a mutually beneficial resolution would be worked to. Because I'm sure if this is ever used, that will try to be the goal at the start, you know, things break down, but such is life. But I think it would be a good way to kind of build complacency and to really encourage people to engage with their constituents at the time of the issue, because it will be coming to council twice to be approved before it'll ever be actually approved. And these are, again, kind of guiding. There's still even more specific things that will come to light, specifically surrounding how the like plebiscite and stuff will be written down. So if this does pass, there is going to be even more specific stuff. And just, I realize that everyone may not know what an SRAMF referenda is. That's the process that we currently use for creating faculty association membership fees and student representative association membership fees. So that's another very rigorous process. So the criteria for that will be applied to this in kind in some way. So I just wanted to provide a little clarification there, just in case people didn't know.
Thank you very much, Councillor Christensen. We'll go next to Councillor Larson.
Yep. Hi, everybody. I'm here to speak in favor of the bill, to echo the same as our Vice President Bannister. Just to have a process is something I believe to be important. Because I'm an art student, I've got almost a metaphor for it, which is the only way that I think turns out. For me, it's kind of like having a dam. It's if we don't have the necessary functions to allow water out every now and again, we'll just break it. If we don't have the necessary functions to ensure that it doesn't just break down every now and again, or worst comes to worst, the whole river just goes around, that's no good. This way you can open up a sluice gate for a little bit of water to come out, for a little bit of tension to be let loose, and generally not have just one explosive situation after another in the times of these what-ifs. Same as I've heard around the table, I don't believe that this process would allow for people to just flash bomb a brand new opinion, but instead have a slow burn or a slow let out of pressure, especially through conversation, through the process. I really hope everybody enjoyed my little speech there, but it is the only way I could think about it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Larson. We'll go next to Councillor Flynn.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. As I was 2 weeks ago, I'm still against this. I don't know why I didn't think of this any sooner. But first principle number three, this process shall include an approved motion by their faculty association's highest governing body. This might come as a shock to any number of you, but Open Studies doesn't have a faculty association. So if there's currently a policy that any of my 1,000 plus constituents don't agree with, according to this proposed bylaw, we have no mechanism to challenge it. What we would have to do is essentially speak with their counselor, who can bring in their concerns to the policy committee, who might be able to change policy, which I don't see why this couldn't apply to any faculty. Rather than crafting this bylaw to let people, as alluded to prior, dance around current policies and let them do their own thing, we already have a committee that's tasked with crafting and modifying current political policies on the books. So we, rather than, similar to a bylaw we passed earlier in the year, crafting something that we hope we never have to use, we could look at working on other ways to go about this. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Flynn. We'll go next to Councillor Farouk.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. And if Council is okay with that, I wrote some things down beforehand so I can be a bit more articulate rather than last time. And speaking of some concerns I've not raised already, I would say that I think using the Alberta versus Canada comparison is somewhat inappropriate because of the wildly different situations in terms of governance. But even if we use that analogy, a few things arise, such as, there's a thing such as equity rather than equality. Equalization payments, for example, are a thing between provinces because of the very different economic and demographic situations between provinces. Provinces aren't united arbitrarily by force. Rather, it is ensured that they're dealt with depending on the individual situations and that they're accommodated for. I think that a similar situation applies there, rather than, but not economically, obviously. To say that a united front is for some greater good over the age of few is a very dangerous and somewhat dictatorial idea in a manner of governance. To say that the needs and voices of a smaller group would be or should be ignored, even when these processes, such as plebiscite, include a hair, which is a direct democratic process, is problematic. And this is the reasoning used by the SCU and exact in the past, where it's where I'm paraphrasing, obviously. Rero said that the SU serves students who are in the need the most at the time. This is the reason used why we post a lot more residences than we do at general students at some points. I think in a way that applies there, where if a smaller faculty is having problems that with political policy, for example, that the rest of the SU is, the rest of the students are not, then we have an obligation to focus on the faculty, and this process is very rigorous and allows for the SU to say that, look, we have direct numbers saying this about something, and we can do something about it. Like to start saying that somehow this is going to undermine the entire SU, I think it's a bit like fear mongering, because I don't think this is going to result in like anything close to like a Quebec leaving or like some analogy like the Brexit. I think that's over dramatic and unnecessary to say that, because this outlines nothing of the sort. I think what this says is that outlines a very thorough process by which yes, you can know and say that, look, we have a number of students that are against this, and to be perfectly honest, if students are against this, faculty associates against this, and particularly if it's a smaller faculty, they will voice their concern whether this process is in place or not. This process allows the SU to cover its back, to have, for the SU not to kind of be like blindsided. Whereas if we don't have this process, the SU will be blindsided, and it's happened multiple times in the past. It happened 2 years ago with the LSA, and people said that was a one-off situation because of a particular individual at the time. But it's not the case. It happened a couple years before then, at least 2007, with the LSA again, with the tuition policy again, and it wasn't resolved at that time because it was ignored, and it rose up some years after that. So obviously, this concern has happened multiple times, and you can't blame it on any one individual. So we do know this is a problem we need to confront and we need to address, and we can't say that some road back to the association is going to undermine us, because with the current way that we dealt with it, we got undermined regardless. So we need a way to deal with this, and I think this is the way this is the best way that we have. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Council Farouk. We'll go next to Vice President Sundar.
Okay. So this has been a very, very contentious motion, not just now, but of course in the past. Now, I'm going to start off with the worries that I had last week. So the worries that I had last week were that in large parts, I was wondering whether a motion like this would actually have proper consultation. So the biggest worry I had is that what if one faculty wants something and another faculty doesn't, and there's some sort of disconnect and there's a miscommunication, and because of that, one faculty gets screwed over by another. However, what I would like to say is that I really appreciate the conversation that we had at bylaw, the last bylaw meeting that we had. I think that this is a very well thought out series of checks and balances. I think this allows for a faculty association who feels that they've been wronged the chance to have a bit of a speaker box. They can tell council, they can tell the other FAs why they think something is wrong, and they can build their argument as to why that should be changed. Even going beyond that, I like the fact that it's not just a straight plebiscite, that it does come back to council, and the fact that other faculty associations who may be very, very much so affected by this do have the chance to say, well, you know, mark modifier in that faculty is going to cause a mark modifier in my faculty, so I don't want to vote for that. I think that there are
a number of checks and balances in this. I think that this is very, very well thought out. It's fair, it's transparent, and in that same kind of vein of thought, I think that that does relieve pressure. If there's one faculty association who feels that they're not being fairly listened to, and they go through this process, and at the end of the day, nothing comes out of it. The rest of the council goes, this doesn't work for us, I'm sorry, but we don't want you to deviate from that, from this political policy. At the very least, they have a reason why. So I'd like to say that I'm going to be voting in favor of this. I think it is well thought out. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Vice President Sundari. We'll go next to Councillor Howie, I believe.
Yes. Okay, first of all, I'd like to thank everyone for the awesome discussion. There was a lot of talk in bylaw this week, and it's really good to see that most people are very, very receptive to the changes. First, I wanted to address Councillor Flamin's concern with the FA. Since Open Studies does not have a faculty association at all, this does not apply in any way because this is for faculty associations only. So if there isn't one, it doesn't apply. I would also like to voice my support for this motion. I don't want to repeat too much of what everyone else has been saying, but I just think that the steps that we have created here really support communication and cooperation and don't create really that much that many challenges for us, because we are just now learning to look more at the FA as a governing body of students, which it is. Like, it does have some power, so we really want to respect that. So I'd like to say that I will be voting in support of this, and I hope that everyone considers the changes.
Thank you very much, Councillor Howie. Is there any further debate on item 7A? We'll go to Mr. Bonnerchuk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To clarify my position a bit, I just jotted some notes down. In response to this creating effective representation, I feel that a councillor debating it in council is representation. I feel that there would be, with this process in place, there is the potential for like actual consultation to be avoided. And again, I understand the steps that are laid out, but people could go to this right away. What I'm saying is if, for example, if arts counselors were to oppose a policy that the SU was presenting, although there are six arts counselors, they certainly don't make up a majority of council, if that motion's passed and then they work to make themselves exempt from it, they're working around an already democratically elected process because the vote didn't fall in their favor. There have been votes in my time on council in the past where motions are passed and I voted against it, and it was unfortunate, but as part of a larger democratic body, I had to live with it and learn what to do next, not how can I get around this and move away from this if it doesn't work in my favor. I definitely never said that smaller groups' concerns should be ignored. Sorry to be more pointed on that one, but like I literally tore the landing. I just wanted to stress that council is the place to voice these concerns and meeting with executives and being at the committee level and discussing the nuances instead of, again, trying to find a way to work around our council from something that's already been passed democratically. I do think we're all on the same page. I think everyone's goal in this room is collaboration and cohesiveness. I don't think any of us are different on that, but I think where we differ is the methods, where I do genuinely see concern with this. I think, and again, while I've said it's not my place to state exactly the specifics of how else to do this, I think there are other more valuable ways to try to fix whatever's been happening, because if this bill is expected to alleviate tension, if that's the purpose of it, there is something more substantially wrong with the relationship that we have with faculty associations. If this is meant to fix something, we should be looking other places to try to fix it instead of kind of having like an exit strategy or a roundabout way to do it. Definitely everything I've said, it absolutely comes from a place of love, to be cheesy, and wanting to be together on things. I feel with this bylaw we'd only be furthering any issues that we've seen with faculty associations, not feeling that their voice is heard. I just think this is the wrong way to go about it. People having this process could have people ignore consultation back and forth with the SU, just wait until they can trigger this this process and then be able to work around it. So again, I don't think there's many more ways I can say it. I do believe in everybody coming together and coming up with the best strategy, but I feel that this process is wrong for it. So I'll be voting no for this motion, and I encourage others to do it as well, because I feel there's a better way to engage constituents instead of looking as divisively as this bill has the potential to be. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll go next to Councillor Brophy.
Thank you. I just wanted to clarify my comments about what I mean by effective representation. I think that, yes, like on terms of a student-to-student level, the current makeup of council and the makeup of FAs do a fantastic job and are completely adequate on a student-to-student discussion level. The problem is, once you get past that, it's not that council's decisions are not final decisions that on what actually happens to students. They're decisions on what to advocate for. So I do have a problem with prioritizing a sort of unity perspective when it's a matter of what we're asking other groups to do. I think that a small group, a small faculty association, should be allowed to effectively go and say to the governmental group's actual power that, hey, this is what is right for our group. And that's what I mean by effective representation. It's representing the interests of their students, their faculty, towards those with the power, the same way that the SDU does for the larger whole and on the multitude of issues where we do have true unity. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Brophy. Is there any further debates on item 7A? Councillor Christensen.
I just wanted to say a few things before we finish. I hope that this will lead to encouragement of those to come together and speak. At this point, we have a lot of consultation among ourselves as the representatives, but I think there's always value in reaching out to talk with FAs and stuff like that. In this case, it would be an FA-driven conversation that I think could allow for them to have their voice heard here, which even if in the end something like this did fail, at least they got to have their voice heard in a more formal process, which is something I would like to list. Finishing with the more political sides of things here, regardless of what happens with this, I just wanted to acknowledge someone who has really helped with this, last year specifically, Azar Khan is here, and he played a very large role in this last year and was kind of my partner in crime with this. And I just wanted to acknowledge him, although I'm not trying to frame this in crime, but, whatever. I just wanted to thank him for the work that he put forward. He never got to see this come to fruition. I don't know if it's going to, but I just wanted to acknowledge him and also acknowledge everyone on the bylaw committee who's taken hours to work through this on multiple occasions. And regardless of what happens, it's really good to have a good discussion here, and I really
thank you very much, Councillor Christensen. Is there any further debates on item 7A? Seeing none, we will go to a vote. Just before we go to a vote, I'll reread the motion so that all the council knows what they're voting on. Councillor Christensen, seconded by Councillor Prock, now move to approve Bill number 2 on the recommendation of Bylaw Committee and amend Bylaw 8100 to allow faculty associations to deviate from political policy according to these principles. Voting system is now live. Please vote. Voting system will close in 3, 2, 1. So that motion carries with 17 in favor, 9 opposed, and 1 abstention. Would the abstention like to be noted? Wonderful. All right. Motion carries. Just before we move into item 7B, I just remembered something that Councillor Christensen brought to my attention before the meeting, which was the voting system itself. I know that now when you press on a particular button to indicate how you're voting, the button that you press stays lit. Is Council all right with that system kind of, yes, because that stays lit?
Okay,
is everyone on council all right with that? I mean, it's the closest thing to a kind of like a public vote that we would have. If council would prefer, we can go back to a kind of a secret ballot style where once you press a button, all the buttons still kind of remain, yes, they remain lit.
I like knowing what button I actually pressed so I can look back and make sure that I hit the right button.
Okay.
I don't want to accidentally abstain when I meant to vote yes or no.
Also, we can hide it with our hands.
You can hide it with your hand or not.
Point of information.
Yeah.
Is it always supposed to, is that the way it's supposed to be a secret ballot, or are we supposed to be voting, are we supposed to be voting on secret ballots for everything all the time?
No.
So, further on that, is there a method in which case, I think these computers can do, you can display the results live as they come in on that screen behind you?
Yeah, I can. It's just a matter of if council actually wants to see the votes as they come in.
It could be a future thing, but I am just curious.
Yeah, I mean, it's not hard to do. It's just a matter of switching between the different display screens. So right now, this screen is showing, whereas now this screen is showing, which would show all the
votes. Can we do a trial run? I just want to see what happens.
Sure.
So now that we're way off standing, we'll turn.
So now it's, but the dark green is a vote in favor, the yellow is opposed, and the kind of mint green is an abstention vote.
Can we use this more often?
We could do this more often if council really wanted to do so. I'm completely indifferent, to be quite honest.
I think it's more accountable than just always assuming a secret ballot all the time. Slightly more accountable.
It's fair. I mean, nobody outside of the chambers will actually get to see the screen, so... Yeah.
Just an interesting note, the General Faculty Council, which meets in the same room, has recently decided to do a hands system instead of the buttons to have it more transparent. There are lots of options. If you feel inclined to know how individuals vote, you can do something called a call for division, which means everyone has to be listed by their vote. If you feel strongly that you want to know how people are voting, that's always your right to do so, unless it's a secret ballot. So just there's many different ways you can vote.
I guess, so just... The speaker, I think, at their discretion can kind of quash a call for division, basically. But I think that will happen in very rare circumstances.
Can you do it after a motion?
No. But I guess to that end, Vice President, I'll just go over this again, just... I know that this is kind of deviating from the agenda, but this would be the closest thing to a public vote or a vote by a show of hands, because you can still see how everybody voted, as long as you get your head wrapped around the orientation of a room. The other two kind of main types of voting are a vote by roll call, which is a call for division, where your vote not only would kind of show up on here, but also would go on public record. Or we go on student public record, I guess. And the last would be a secret ballot vote where everyone's votes would be secret. So, I mean, if people on council want to proceed with showing this at all times when we're voting, that's totally fine with me. If anyone is severely opposed to that...
Perhaps this is a good conversation for Cal.
Great. I just thought I'd get some general feedback. But
thank you.
good luck with that, Councillor Angus. That's
can't wait.
After your
put it on there.
After your discussion on council hoodies and where, you can discuss the hot button issue of how we should vote. So
with cardboard.
All right. So with that, we'll move on to item 7B, universal resources. Bill number 3, Universal Resources and Labors. First principles, Councillor Larson, seconded by Councillor Howie, moved to approve Bill number 3 and amend bylaw 2200 and 2300 on the recommendation of bylaw committee to implement universal resources and labors. First principles are as follows. Number 1, current bylaws on universal resources are vague, which allows for campaigns to gain undue and unaccountable advantages during the elections process. Number 2, bylaws 2200 and 2300 shall be amended to define universal resource spending to ensure that candidates and size are given the ability to innovate as well as be held accountable in reporting expenditures outside of their main budgets. Councillor Larson, would you like to introduce your motion?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thanks, everybody, for being here. I, just to start off, was told very kindly to actually write a speech and not ad hoc, so I'm going to actually do read from a speech from a change, just so everybody knows. To start off, the big reason why we put this together, and it was with the help of a couple other counselors, was to really just inject clarity into Universal Resources. Right now, it's kind of like an ad hoc process with our CRO, and it hasn't been going smoothly for the last few years. We were really hoping to clarify it much more strongly, make it a lot more accessible to individual candidates and sides, and make it a lot less daunting. Right now, the entire process is spread out throughout three specific parts within 2200 and 2300. So fee, like, throughout, what's it called? Fee market assessments. Fair market assessments, thank you, Brandon. And universal resource spending, and then labors and a couple other things that will be touched up to make sure this all comes into one bill and is a lot, reads a lot easier. Down that train of thought as to what a universal resource is, we were using kind of the vague statement that we're working with, which would be the core of this, which was universal resources and labors are campaign materials, products, resources, anything really that a candidate or side could procure, which is not limited to other persons, so anything that a side or candidate could get, but everybody else has access to. Kind of the same language that exists now, except with kind of a flip to it. Instead of saying you can't use anything if everybody else doesn't have access to it, now it's if you have access to something you can, everybody else has access to as well, you can't use it as a universal resource. It's a bit of a flip, but it allows for a bit more creativity to, in the way that you would add a specific process to make something a universal resource. So for us, that specific process would be things like the CRO to determine something to be a universal resource. The things that are supplied by our SU, the materials and other things as well, continue to be universal resources. Or, along those same thought processes, anything that we could prove is available to all persons could also be deemed a universal resource. Really, the final comments I have is we really thought that doing this would allow us to better manage a campaign, to really ensure that, like, when our side, when our managers, our campaign managers or us, were trying to put together our budgets, we really knew what to put in them, where to put our expenditures outside of our own budgets, and things like that. For anybody who's ever ran in an executive campaign, it was a bit confusing to start off with, and really made things a little bit odd for a lot of people. We really thought it would inject a lot of accountability into those budgets outside of our main budgets, especially for executive campaigns. This time around, it was kind of like an ad hoc process where we did have, or the CRO did say you had to submit a budget, but there is no real bylaw for that. We would like to see that actually be a requirement to ensure that people do put in their outside expenditures and we do get accountability for these universal resource spending. And then really just to empower people to think of new and creative ways to use universal resources, to deem something a universal resource, or to prove that things that they have access to they can supply to other persons, or that is already available to everybody. So that's the basis of it. Thank you so much for listening, and open to discussion.
Thank you very much, Councillor Larson. We'll open up the discussion, starting with Councillor Brophy.
Thank you. This is something that I think is a really great idea, because currently there, for issues of accessibility and fairness, because currently there is an issue with, you know, we've talked about things like that, we try to get more students involved. And the big reason why a lot of students are afraid of getting involved is they look at all of these complicated bylaws full of double negatives and things you absolutely cannot do, and say, okay, well, if there's this huge chance that I could, that something I'm doing could deem to be inappropriate and I could get fined and suddenly find myself disqualified, why even bother starting? I know that that's why I was, it wasn't one of the reasons I never ran for a council position before I entered law school, is that I was all, that I figured, you know what, this whole process just seems like a Byzantine mess of rules. This is, whereas this helps to reformulate that so that it stops it from being a post hoc question of that thing that you did, well, now we're telling you that, oh, oops, that wasn't universal, so I'm being charged for it, and make sure that it's done beforehand. Make sure that people who have an idea and think that something might be useful by everybody are going through a bit of a process to get that declared yes or no, and then if it's declared no, then they're given the fair market value assessment before they use it rather than after, assuming that they're actually following this process. It enables people to work with some more creativity and to not have to worry quite so much about the random over budget disqualifications, and also enables people to more easily share things that they might have donated to their campaign, because currently donations are given a fair market value assessment rather than having a chance to say, hey, everybody who's running for the same position, you can use this like scrap wood that I have to make signs or whatever the item might be. It also has a chance to combine things from different sections of the bylaws that have more relevance, because right now the separate resources of labor are in separate parts of the document, and so combining that together, again, helps with clarity and helps people be more comfortable taking the plunge and running for a position. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Brophy. Is there any further discussion on item 7B? Seeing none, once again, the motion is as follows. Larson, Howie, move to approve Bill Number 3 and amend Bylaw 2200 and 2300 on the recommendation of Bylaw Committee to implement universal resources and labors. So the voting system is now live. Please vote. Voting system will close in 3, 2, 1.
Oh man, that's cool.
So the motion carries with 21 in favor, 3 opposed, and 3 abstentions. Would the abstentions like to be noted? Wonderful. That was a bit excessive, but I guess the celebration may have been in order.
It's his first time.
It's my first bill, Sajid.
I'm not going to comment on that. We'll move on to item 7C. Patches Hammond move upon recommendation of the Finance Committee to allow the release of $3,495.58 from the WUSC Reserve to the WUSC Board of Directors. Vice President Patches, would you like to introduce your motion?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Thank you, Council. So this bill was brought through upon the recommendation of the Finance Committee. I'll provide a bit of a background before jumping into the actual what the bill means. So approximately a little over a month ago, the current co-chair of the University of Alberta chapter of the WUSC Association contacted me and informed me that a student was having trouble paying back their travel loan in time. Now, when a refugee student comes over here from WUSC, the funds from WUSC are used to help supplement their tuition, helping them, making sure that they can meet the necessary costs to continue or start their education here at the University of Alberta. However, when they first come over here, they get a travel loan from the Government of Canada, which covers the cost to actually fly over here, make sure that they're safely out of the situation that they're in. Unfortunately, this travel loan sometimes has quite a quick payback period. And in this case, there was a student that was unsure if they'd be able to make their travel loan back. So what WUSC asked me is if they could possibly use their reserve, the funds from their reserve from their DFU, to create a payback plan between WUSC and the student instead of having the student locked to a payback plan from the government. So I brought this issue to Finance Committee, and we had a pretty lengthy discussion at Finance Committee about it, and as noted here, Finance Committee has recommended that we go forward, and we had two key takeaways from our discussion. Our first key takeaway was we wanted to make sure that this indeed goes forward as a loan to the student and then has a fair payback plan period and isn't a grant. Because the mandate that students voted on for the WUSC DFU is that the funds be used to help with tuition, and they don't want to set a precedent that it's not sustainable to be providing the cost to every single travel loan. So this will be a loan to help out in this situation. Going from that point, we then move forward. Okay, so this is an issue. What happens if this happens in the future? So then we'll also be giving a recommendation to the WUSC board through our representatives on the WUSC board that a process be developed for this happening in the future. So if there is some if a student is unable to make those travel loans, that there's a more set process in which to be followed. And as per student union bylaw, to access any of these reserves, especially for dedicated funds such as the WUSC reserve, which is a reserve that this reserve are meant for one, the only purpose of this, we need both committees. council approval to take these funds out of the reserve and then give them to the board of directors in order to help them repay back that loan. And I'd be happy to field any questions on this bill.
Thank you very much, Vice President Patches. We'll start off debate with Councillor Larson.
I guess more of a direct question than a debate. I would be in favor in general, but is it, and just a strange question, is there an interest rate attached to the loan, or is it just like a flat loan that they would pay back over a period of time?
Thank you very much for the question, Councillor Larson. We'll go next to Councillor Farouk.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm in favor of the motion as well. My only question would be, I don't think there's any interest period because that would not, because that seems kind of mean.
Yeah, that's fine.
But my general questions that I would ask are, what's the period that the SU would ask for our loan to this individual to be paid back to us? I'm assuming it'd be like about a year, but Vice President Pat just can't clarify. And how large the most reserve is, and like, well, how this would affect their operations over the next year or so. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Farouk. Is there any further debate on item 7C? Before we go back to Vice President Patches. Go ahead, Vice President Patches.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. First off, on the interest-free loan and the payback period, so technically, this money right now, so actually I'll answer all three questions in a row. Technically, this money, the $3,495, is part of the WUSC dedicated reserve, which has a size of about 23,000. So pulling this out would not affect that reserve at all. And the reserve's purpose is to provide funding should something like this happen, where there is a bit of an emergency, we need money. Going forward to that, the payback period and the decision on the interest rate would be, of course, that would be decided between the WUSC Board of Directors and that student when they're creating a loan deal. However, as having two representatives on that board, student council does have the ability to provide a recommendation in that decision. And by the two voices I've heard so far, it sounds like our recommendation would be no interest rate. And then the payback period, I'm sure I'm sure the board would create a fair payback period for that student based on that student's needs and their current living situation.
Thank you very much, Vice President Patches. Is there any further debates on item 7C? Seeing none, is there anyone opposed to carrying item 7C? Is there anyone who would like to abstain from item 7C? Wonderful, so that motion carries unanimously. All right. I believe that exhausts our agenda for this evening. So, is there anything else? All right, so we'll quickly take attendance and we'll let you go to wherever you'd like to go. I know that some people on council are getting together at the Needle afterwards or Earl's. It's really up to you folks. All right, so we'll start from the top with President Rahman, Vice President Bannister, Vice President Sundari,
here.
Vice President Patches,
present.
Vice President Al-Hussein,
present.
Governor Champagne,
present.
Councilor McKinley, Councilor Angus, proxy for Councilor Kiani,
present.
Councilor DeTirwa, proxy for Councilor Mondo,
here.
Councilor Larson,
here.
Councilor Victoria Dion,
here.
Councillor Hammond?
Here, sorry.
That's okay. Councillor Alamouri?
Here.
Councillor Prasad?
Here.
Councillor Procknow?
Here.
Councillor Naheed?
Here.
Proxy for Councillor Jason Wong?
Here.
Councillor Nick Dion? Councillor Brophy?
Here.
Councillor Christensen?
Here.
Councillor Scott?
Here.
Councillor Flannan?
Here.
Councillor Howie?
Present.
Councillor Warrior?
Present.
Councillor Kwan?
Here.
Proxy for Councillor Newman?
Here.
Councillor Nguyen? Councillor Mahal?
Here.
Councillor Kevin Wong? Councillor Farouk?
Here.
And I'm here, the general manager is not. Meeting adjourned at 7:14 p.m.